welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. Today I'm speaking with Christina Smallwood, who I originally started following on Instagram at Fifi and Mo, and she posted a darling picture of her daughter Finley, who's 3 years old, dancing. And Finley is a special little girl because she has cerebral palsy, and she does not let that stop her. There she is with her walker, dancing with her mom to Meghan Trainor's song, and it is just the cutest. And since then, it's kind of gone viral, and lots of other groups of people have been posting their own dancing pictures as a way to fundraise and raise awareness for an upcoming surgery that she has going on. So today I'm going to talk with Christina about their journey through the adoption process and adopting their daughter, Finley, who was born prematurely, but they didn't know for certain what her special needs might be or even if she would have any. And then she was diagnosed around age 2 with cerebral palsy. And she's going to talk about what that's like, parenting a child with special needs, how that's changed her as a mom, and what she wants people to know about her sweet daughter, Finley. I can't wait for you to get to know Christina a little bit better. Let's get to it. All right, I want to welcome Christina Smallwood to the show today. Hi, Christina.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going.
Where am I talking to you from today?
I'm in sunny Southern California.
Awesome. What part? I'm from San Diego originally.
Oh, wow. We're just about an hour and a half north of that in Corona.
Oh, awesome. That's so great. Well, I'm so excited to talk with you about your motherhood journey today. I found you on Instagram and just love that space of positivity that you're putting out into the world. And I want to talk more about your story today. So for people that may not follow along at Fifi and Mo, tell me a little bit about yourself, Christina.
So, I am married to my high school crush, and I am 31 years old. I'm a hairstylist by trade, and found my journey through motherhood to be quite interesting. So, I decided to start an Instagram that would be just geared towards adoptive families and special needs families. Mm. I found that using fashion would help us advocate and spread our page so that we could get to know more and more and more families.
Yeah.
And that's sort of me in a nutshell right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. So tell me about that journey, your adoption journey. Is that something that you always planned on, or what did that look like for you guys?
No, I mean, my husband and I, we were the sort of the type of people, which I've come into contact with often, that said, oh, I'd love to adopt one day. And never did we think that that would be an actual reality for ourselves. We found out shortly after your wedding anniversary that I had what's called diminished ovarian reserve.
Hmm.
And it's a known side effect to the serious acne medication Accutane.
Oh, wow.
And it basically just dries you up from the inside out, and it can rot your eggs.
Really?
So, I mean, being young, I never thought that would happen to me, and I never thought that I'd have issues, and I really didn't have any concerns with getting pregnant at that point in time. I was only 23.
Yeah.
And I hadn't re-met my husband yet. But we found out our results. It hit me hard. I told myself, you know what? I'm just going to give myself 24 hours to feel sorry for myself. There's nothing I can do to change this. And we spoke and prayed. And I think even just the next day, we both were like, we need to adopt. Like,
wow.
This is it. I was so exhausted from trying to get pregnant. I could not imagine going down the infertility journey. I just couldn't.
Yeah, and I've heard that before. I interviewed Heather Avis. I don't know if you follow her on Instagram, but she had a similar issue where when she found out that she was not going to be able to have biological children naturally, I said, well, did you think about exploring IVF or those avenues? And she's like, you know what? It didn't feel like that was right for us. And I love that you do have the choice. Some people, that is the right choice for them to go through that, but that is a journey. And just like, okay, that doesn't feel right, but adoption does. That is a journey in and of itself. So you just kind of have to choose what is right for you and what are your priorities and just kind
absolutely.
Of see that
I have
fit.
So many friends that are doing IVF. My hat's off to them.
Yeah.
It's a whole nother kind of emotional, painful journey that I did not see us suited for.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that honesty. I think that's a great answer. So when you started pursuing adoption, I know that can be a lengthy and complicated process.
Yeah,
how was it for you? Yeah.
So my mom, coincidentally, my dad had passed away. It's a long story, but it's a crazy story. So my dad passed away and she was seeing a trust attorney regularly. And at one appointment, he just said, you know, if you ever know anyone that wants to adopt, that's what my heart is for. And I have such a passion in it. Two of my kids are adopted. You would never know. And my mom was kind of like, this is weird that he's just going off on adoption. So she came home and told me, and that might have stuck with me. So when my husband and I decided, I said, Mom, you got to call Tim. Like, he's going to be our attorney. I just know it. And so we had an appointment with him within a week, and he laid down everything there is to know about adoption in a very, very short hour. Mm-hmm. And we chose domestic adoption through an attorney. And yeah, just got the ball rolling almost immediately.
That's amazing. It seemed like the stars were just aligned for you to be ready in that season.
Truly, truly.
What surprised you the most about pursuing adoption? Is there anything that you didn't know going into it that you were like, whoa?
How many kids there are up for adoption in the United States?
Yeah.
That was probably the most like, oh my gosh, there's babies everywhere,
right,
all over. And I think there's just a lot of families that think, oh, it's going to take me years, so I'm not going to do it. Well, the statistic was you actually can most likely get matched within the first 3 months.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that. That is a surprise.
That blew me away.
Yeah.
And that we actually fell into that statistic. We got matched in the second month.
Wow. And so did you create a profile and did you go on lots of interviews, or how did that work?
We created a biography, and basically they were like, you can make it just a picture, you can make it a story. I, of course, was like, here's a beautiful book, and it's a scrapbook, and it has stories, and I try to make the pictures go along with the stories, and just try to put as much of my personality into it as possible.
Right.
And and basically, as soon as a expecting mother comes into the attorney's office, she gets presented with a pamphlet where she picks what she wants for her unborn child's family.
Uh-huh.
And then if we fall into that category, then they get presented with our book. And actually, our expecting parents were so coveted because there wasn't drug abuse, there wasn't, you know, different types of different abuse. They wanted a lot of different adoptive hopefuls to get the chance. So I think they were shown 7 or 8 different books, and we were their second choice.
That is amazing. And so when you met them, what was that like, meeting the biological mother of the person, like the person that's going to potentially bring your daughter into the world?
I'm having flashbacks to, like, in the bathroom. We met at a little Coco's, and the attorney came to be, like, an icebreaker.
Yeah.
And I just remember standing in the mirror, giving myself a pep talk.
Yeah.
Like, be cool. Don't be like Jennifer Garner on Juno, you know? I'm like, you can do this. Be cool. And so I was so eager to want to, like, know everything about her pregnancy that I just had to, like, my husband's like, tone it down. You can do this. So, I mean, it was nerve-wracking. It was, like, more intense than going on a blind first date.
Right. It's like a blind date, job interview.
Yeah, exactly.
All wrapped into one. That had to be so emotional. And, like, the stakes were so high. I can only imagine.
And they were so intimidated and so quiet and reserved and you know, nervous that it was like we all were that nervous. So I was so glad the attorney came with us. And
wow. And so how long before you found out that you were selected?
So the attorney told us, okay, look, I'll know within 5 minutes at the dinner table if you are going to be a match. Like, I can spy it, you know, I can spot it. So we exchanged numbers, me and the expecting mother, and when we left, he's like, this is really good. If you exchange numbers, this is almost, you know, 9 times out of 10. So I was hopeful, but they were reluctant to tell us they picked us for about a week. So in the meantime, I was texting with her around the clock, asking her things. We were really careful not to overpromise anything. Like, you know, you can't bribe them.
Right,
so,
right.
I just wanted to get to know her and where her head was at. She wasn't as far along as they normally are when they match them.
Uh-huh.
She was only 5.5 months.
Okay.
So normally they don't like to match till 7 months. And they called us when they were together. Neither of them drove, so it was hard for them to actually get together. But they wanted to tell us when they were together that they picked us. And that was a very emotional phone call that we received.
That's amazing. What a special thing. And, I mean, I think all children are sent to this earth with specific parents that are meant to be theirs, you know? And you may not have carried her, but did you feel like, this is my daughter thing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like she was, like, made for me.
Yeah, I love that. I love those stories because it was just, it's all part of God's plan. You know, it all works together for good. That's so amazing. So she was born prematurely. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So tell me about that.
9 weeks early.
Wow. Was that really scary? And tell me about that.
You know, so I was more excited. I mean, I think like the logical side of my brain just left when we got the call that she was born. My husband was like, this is really early. This is really scary. And I'm like, she's here. I'm going to buy her this bow.
Yeah.
I'm going to put this bow on her and look at this blanket. And like, I was just so excited that she was here that I don't think that the reality of the medical, you know, I don't know, probabilities was getting into my head, and rightfully so. Like, it wouldn't have changed anything for me, regardless how wrapped around my brain I had it.
Right, absolutely. And so, did she have any health issues from the get-go, or what were the main concerns for her?
Not really. They called her a grower feeder, I guess, in the NICU. That just means, you know, there's no intense issues that need to be monitored, other than just learning to grow and feed, which comes around 34 weeks gestation. So she was going to be in there a few weeks just for that.
Right.
And then it was a few hours that we were there with her that we were met with the neurosurgeon. They did a routine ultrasound scan on the brain, and they did spot a little bit of debris and that they were going to monitor it, but there was no need for surgery. No sign of seizures. She did have a little bit of apnea in her breathing, but that was normal while learning to suck, breathe, swallow.
Right.
Swallow.
Yeah.
So it's been a while.
Yeah.
it was more like we didn't have any like strong concerns while we were in there.
Right. Typical preemie type stuff.
That thing seemed dire. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's just go back to those early days. So once she was released from the hospital and you were a mom for the first time, tell me about those early days and what were the best parts and the hardest parts and surprising parts and all those parts.
It was terrifying.
Yeah.
I was so used to having the nurses and the monitors and all this, like, helping me. And so I tried to stay on their schedule, which was, like, every 3 hours, feed her, change her, sleep, you know?
Right.
And so I tried to stay on that. I was as routinely regimented as a crazy NICU mom can be. No one was allowed to touch her. I might have went a little overboard with that. It inhibited, like, grandparents from bonding and stuff like that. But I was psycho because I watched her, you know, just, like, be barely alive those first few days. And so it was scary. The hardest part was, I think anything normal that comes with a newborn, just your whole life's thrown upside down.
Right.
In a blink of an eye. I cried a lot. I don't know postpartum for adoptive moms, I feel like it's a very real thing.
Yeah.
And, I cried a lot out of happiness and a lot out of, just fatigue.
Yeah, right.
Just emotions all over the place.
Yeah, and sometimes it's hard to differentiate those tears. It's like hour to hour.
You would think, and then, you know, being out and people saying, you look you look pretty good for just having a baby. I'm like, oh, geez, like, thank you.
Pretty
like,
good?
What does that mean?
Exactly.
Thanks, I think.
It is so, I mean, yeah, being a first-time mom, getting thrown in there, like, you think you're as prepared as you can be, but, I mean, these babies come so individualized. There is no manual for your particular baby, you know? So even if you're as ready as possible, there's still no prepping you.
No, I tell all my girlfriends, I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm like, you know those moments when you sit down and you think, oh, I would love to have my baby right here? I'm like, you're not doing that consistently 24/7 throughout the day. So you're not really preparing yourself for what it's like to have a baby there 24/7.
Right, exactly.
That's like the biggest life-changing thing. And so, I mean, it's hard. I told my friends, I'm like, behind every picture of a newborn is a crying mom.
Exactly. Yep, there's 23 hours and 56 more minutes, right, where those came from.
Exactly.
So, over time, you started to have some concerns with Finley's development. Tell me about what you started to notice in her.
She really had a problem sucking the pacifier. Mm-hmm. That was one thing I really noticed, like those muscles just weren't strong enough to suck.
Mm-hmm.
For feeding, we actually did like a bigger nipple and put her on her side so that it could kind of drain into her mouth. And like feeding was really difficult. Just even holding on to things with our hands, sitting up. She didn't sit up for a long time. I think she was probably close to 10 or 11 months when she would sit up in the bathtub. And that was like even in like one of those rubberized little bottoms.
Mm-hmm.
So originally with her brain bleeding, they put her in therapy through this thing called the Inland Regional Center, and they provide early intervention therapy services for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really great. I had no idea it existed. They reached out to me. I have no idea how they found me. I am very grateful for them. And they basically got us sort of in a row, all of our ducks in a row for who we were going to need to talk to. Neurologist, ophthalmologist, all these people. So
is this before her diagnosis or after?
This was before the diagnosis.
Wow.
Actually, sort of at her year checkup, one of the nurses that was her coordinator came out. She's like, why does this girl not have a diagnosis? And I'm like, what do you mean? I thought we were kind of like wait and see. And she goes, well, we've waited and now we see. And I'm like, oh my God. She's like, she needs a diagnosis yesterday. She needs more services, more this, more that. And I was just a mess crying, you know, like, oh my gosh, there really is something wrong. I mean, you can be in denial. Denial is very strong and you can be in it for as long as you need. And then a nurse, you know, just will give you that wake up call. So,
And you thought you were in denial, or you just didn't feel like it was as
denial,
urgent?
Like, because there's delays, and then there's severe delays.
Right.
And I sort of felt like, well, she was reaching those benchmarks, and she was reaching milestones, just really delayed. So to think the word handicap or have a diagnosis permanently stamped on her record.
Right.
Her neurosurgeon was really reluctant to want to even diagnose her. He said, I don't think that you need to be marking her or labeling her if you don't need to. And then this nurse who knows how to work the system and knows about the system is like, this girl, if you look at her chart, it says she is, you know, adjusted age 13 months old and she just started crawling and she can't stand up and she can't, like, that is severely motor skill delayed. And so I'm like, oh, okay, well, when you put it that way on paper, then yeah, you know, then it became more obvious to me.
Were you glad that she was so upfront with you, or do you wish she kind of handled you with more care?
No, I mean, at the time, if you'd asked me, I probably had a few choice phrases.
Right.
For her.
That sounds harsh.
I love her now. She's like, want to become a friend. And, I'm glad. I appreciate it when people were a little rough, like, because sometimes you can be just kind of floating through and it takes those certain core words to kind of like jolt you.
Yeah.
And I needed that.
Right. And if there is help available for your child, obviously, like, you're a loving, concerned mom, you want those things for your daughter, but sometimes you don't know what you don't know.
Well, and the catch 22 is, okay, so you don't label her, you don't put it on her birth certificate, I mean, on her, what is it called, medical record.
Yeah.
Then she doesn't get the services she needs.
Right,
okay.
Right.
Well, then she doesn't get very much better because, you know, you really have until the age of 5 to do the most advances that you're going to be able to do.
Right.
So the other part is, okay, let's label her, let's get all the services, and then she might even outgrow this.
Right.
You know, and so, yeah, she'll be labeled, but she might not look like she has CP.
Right.
So that was kind of the route. I was like, you know what, I don't care. Words are words.
Right.
And,
She was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, and did you know very much about it before that diagnosis?
No, I had no idea, and it's crazy because I had come into contact with a few people with CP, but they were all wheelchair bound and nonverbal and very extreme cases, and so I just had no idea there was such an umbrella for it, and I mean, now looking back, I can think of tons of people throughout my childhood that I came into contact with that most likely had CP, and I just had no idea.
Right, exactly. And when you hear that word, you might have a stereotypical type vision, like you're saying.
Yeah.
But is there a range that kids can have with that?
Yeah.
With
it
that
could
label?
Be,
yeah.
It could be as slight as a wrist being flexed or a slight turn in one leg. It can be very, very, very slight. It looks even just a tiny limp.
Yeah, interesting. So describe Finley's condition to me and to the listeners.
So Finley is labeled mild cerebral palsy with spastic diplegia. So, but she's kind of on the more extreme for the mild.
Okay.
So she's more towards the middle.
Okay.
And she will definitely walk with a limp even after the surgery. And her left wrist kind of gets brought up to her elbow while she is trying to walk.
Mm.
So she does look stereotypically, if you Google spastic diplegia, they have like these like little models, like drawings. And that's exactly what she'll look like with one knee turned in and one wrist brought up. And she is pretty kind of hunched to her left, and she walks with the walker when she will extend both arms when she's holding on to something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, that would be a different kind if her arm was stuck like that. It'd be called dystonic. I really don't know exactly what she's going to look like after the surgery when she walks, but I mean, they told me to anticipate a limp, and that does not bother me at all.
Right.
As long as she is independent and can get up when she wants to get up, that is our main goal.
Absolutely. So tell me about the surgery. What is the surgery, and what will that will make it so she doesn't have to have a walker anymore?
Yes.
So what is the surgery?
So it's called the selective dorsal rhizotomy. They've been doing it since the 80s. Dr. Park specifically, that's who we are going to be seeing by the end of this year. And I believe it's laparoscopically, they go in and they remove the spine wall. And I don't know off the top of my head between which vertebrae it is.
Mm-hmm.
But they take out all the nerves and then they test each nerve as it goes back in. And they single out the ones that control the spasticity in the legs.
Wow.
And so they cut them permanently. Then they put her back together, and when she wakes up from surgery, I've seen dozens of videos where the kids are able to actually wiggle their toes, which she can't right now. She doesn't have that much control of her legs.
Mm-hmm.
So even that is super emotional to think about. Then it is just a intensive therapy for 6 months post-surgery to build up that muscle now that her brain can actually tell her legs what to do. We just have to get strong enough to where now she can do it on her own.
That is unbelievable.
It's medical, like crazy advancements.
Do they usually do it when they're this young?
Yeah, ideally the age is 3.
Wow. And how old is she right now? 3?
She's turned 3, yeah.
Wow. How exciting to have that possibility on the horizon. That's amazing. Oh, I'm so excited for you and for that potential. That is really exciting. I can't wait to follow up with you after it's successful.
I'm so excited.
That will be awesome. So being a parent of a child with special needs, I mean, you don't know any different. She's your only child, but how has that changed you as a mom, and how have you evolved as a person now that Finley's in your life? That's a big question.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know how to answer that one. So I guess I've learned to roll with the punches.
Yeah.
Speak. Anything that was a big deal to me before is no longer a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't care if things are dirty, clean, used, been on the floor. I mean, I just feel like I'm just at one one with motherhood now. I feel like, I don't know, I don't sweat the small stuff.
Yeah.
I cannot say that enough. Like, my friends have noticed that. Like, things that I used to be sort of hot-headed, I think, before this.
Uh-huh.
And so things can happen. I'm just like, whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like the first year I would tell people, I feel like I'm kind of surviving the day. And I know that sounds horrible, but I feel like I can identify with a lot of moms, especially special needs moms.
Right.
The whole like Dory method, you know, just keep swimming, you'll get through it. You just kind of keep going and just trying to enjoy everything as it's happening.
Right.
Because it's so easy to, I've noticed I kept like looking forward to the next thing. And then before I knew it, I was like, oh my gosh, she's not going to ever be back to where she was.
Right.
And so just a lot of reflecting more so. I think that I'm more emotional and I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I hear that time and time again. And I mean, it doesn't take a huge traumatic event or diagnosis or anything like that. Like, what if we could all just appreciate those small things so much more and to just appreciate our kids for their milestones, where whatever that may look like for them, and to appreciate those small things, because it is true, like, you can't get these days back. But then it also kind of weighs on you where people are saying, oh, they grew up so fast, enjoy every moment, and it kind of stresses you out, like, well, did I enjoy every moment today? I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
no, I probably did not enjoy every moment.
Yeah.
Cry, but there are certain moments that keep your brain for,
yes,
for the better of everyone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree. So you put out a video of Finley dancing, and it's the cutest thing, and we'll link to it in the show notes. Tell me why you put out that video of her dancing and how this kind of dancing movement got started in order to raise awareness and funds and things like that.
So, okay. We were watching, Finley loves to watch YouTube.
Uh-huh.
I'm a bad mom, I know. She watches YouTube.
No.
So, she loves to watch YouTube. This one little girl, Heaven, she dances on Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little mom-daughter duo, whatever. So, Finley loves to watch it. And so, she was watching it. She was kind of trying to stand up. I could see her trying to, like, kind of mimic Heaven. And this is the first time she had done this. And so, I looked at her, and I was just watching. And she looks at me, and she goes, Mommy, I want to dance. Well, the Meghan Trainor song was on the TV.
Uh-huh.
We had lots of media on that day.
Yeah.
So, I was like, okay. So, I was like, okay. And so, I'm like, I'm got the idea. I'm like, she's watching this little girl dance with her mom. She would probably love to watch herself dancing or another little girl like her dancing. And then I thought, oh, but other little kids would like to see this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I looked like a hot mess that day too. And now knowing how many people were watching it, I wish I would have, you know, done my hair and makeup a little bit. But
how many people have seen it now?
I don't know. It was like at 5,000 last time I checked, which that's a lot.
That's a lot of people when you're not expecting anybody.
So yeah, so I just put the camera on like rear facing. It was like totally like amateurly done, and put on the song, and we just danced, and she loved it. And then every time the song would end, she'd be like, again. So it was really fun. That turned into like a weekly routine for us.
That is so much fun.
So my girlfriend saw it, and she had known that I was sort of on again, off again about this surgery. And she's like, well, if you ever need to fundraise for it, I have the best idea. And I'm like, what? I'm like, just tell me. She's like, well, you know that Meghan Trainor song that you guys danced to? Like, what if we danced to it, posted a video, and then asked other people to dance to it? And I was like, oh, like the Ice Bucket Challenge? And she was like, yeah. She's like, we just have to come up with like a clever name. And and so that's sort of how it got started. And then we really got to work after that.
Yeah. So who's been posting dance videos now?
Well, okay, so tons of different fire departments. Obviously, the LA Fire Department, Task Task Force 60 started it off. Then we had the Covina PD, the cast of Wizard of Oz, Perez Hilton, tons of different cheer squads, dance studios. The Toyota Sports Center had some Kings players, some Lakers, some professional figure skaters.
Oh my gosh. Would you have ever dreamed that it would, like, snowball like this?
Not even a little bit.
That is so great. And does she like watching these videos? I'm sure.
Yes, she loves it. So, I mean, she obviously loves the song. So, me and Brittany take turns, like, reposting the videos on the Instagram and stuff. Yeah. So they automatically save to my phone. Uh-huh. So she'll just sit and, like, watch them. And she loves them, especially when the ones with kids. She loves watching other kids dance. And so it's been so cool. Like, we go to sleep and wake up singing Meghan Trainor.
That's amazing. Well, I think Meghan Trainor needs to find out about her and needs to dance with her.
I know. Touched base with her publicist, but she just started her tour, so I know she's slammed. Yeah.
Someday, when the timing's right. That is so amazing. And that's helped you raise funds to allow her to be able to have the surgery, right?
Yes, we've been very blessed to see so many donors, and a lot of them want to remain anonymous, and they're bigger donors, and they'll write from one adoptive family to another, and it's like, I just cry. I just cry all day when I look at these things.
And
it's a blessing.
Yeah, and we all have our own stories. And it's like everyone, whether you have money to donate or just a story to share or a hug or a smile or a dance, there's always something that we can be doing to make somebody else's day.
Absolutely.
You know? And that's why I think it's so wonderful about your Instagram and kind of the message that you're spreading with Finley is just that, you know, this is your story and you're putting what you can out there. And in return, you're getting so much love back, which is amazing.
Yeah. It's indescribable.
Yeah. That is just so awesome. That's so awesome. So obviously Finley has a surgery coming up. Is it scheduled? Do you have plans for that?
It's in November.
Wow. Well, we hope the very best for her. And I mean, what is your hope for Finley? What do you want people to know about your sweet daughter?
Oh man. I haven't never thought about that before. What do I want people to know?
Because some people might see her walking with her walker and think something automatic like, oh, that poor girl or things like that.
I delete all the comments where people write, this is so sad or
right,
something like that.
Right.
It's not sad. She is probably, all my friends tell me this all the time and they all have kids her age.
Yeah.
They're like, she's literally the happiest little girl I've ever met. And she really is. And she's not yet aware of all this going on. And our hope is that we can do everything in our power to where she can just do what she wants to do when she wants to do it before she can remember not being that way.
Yeah.
And she's going to do, I guarantee you, everything she sets her mind to.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's important for other people to know about not just her, but all children with special needs and handicaps and things like that. It's like, don't underestimate them. They may have challenges that you can see, but we all have challenges of some sort we're trying to overcome, and sometimes you just can't see them, and that can be harder, you know, sometimes.
Absolutely.
So just not counting anybody out, and especially a sweet little spirit like Finley who just wants to dance and wants to be happy.
Yeah, she does. She really does just want to dance all the time.
I love that so much. I love that so much. So, I mean, being a mom of a child with special needs, that is all consuming. How do you recharge? What do you do to take care of yourself?
Oh, do I take care of myself? I work.
Okay.
I go to work.
What do you do?
Yeah, I do hair and makeup for special events, mostly weddings.
That's awesome.
Usually Friday, Saturdays. My girlfriend and I started a company about 6-7 years ago, and we do over 180 weddings a year.
Wow.
And, I love it. I get to go. I get to make people – I get to provide a service and make people feel good about themselves and use my hands and be creative. And that's sort of my outlet.
I love that. That's awesome.
Like writing, blogging. I don't just sit and write. I write like when something comes to me. So yeah. It's been a while since I've blogged, but, yeah, that's another outlet too.
Yeah.
So I definitely recharge, during those times.
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. awesome. That's awesome. So for people that want to follow you on Instagram, you're at Fifi and Mo, and I'll provide links to this on our website, Extraordinary Moms Podcast. Cool. And then what is your blog?
FifiandMo.com.
Okay. Yeah. And I'll link to the dance videos as well and whatnot. Well, I always ask my guests one final question, and it's this. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
Girl.
You have no idea.
Hold on for the ride of your life.
Yep. Exactly.
That's literally all I would say. Yep. And I would leave the rest to for her to discover.
Exactly. Yeah, because no matter what anybody else tells you ahead of time, you're never going to be quite there. Like, you didn't tell me. I love it so much. Christina, thank you so much for sharing your story and for sharing your Finley. And we just wish the very best for her surgery and just everything going forward for your family. I want to thank Christina for being on the show today. Don't you love that story and just how inspiring a little three-year-old girl can be and how by simply posting a dance video, how that kind of spiraled. And it's so funny because when she went to send me some pictures to put on the website, she had said on the podcast that there was about 5,000 views of that dancing video. No. She's like, I guess I was a little off. There's about 18,000 views now. Just about three times what she thought. So people are loving that video. So head over to the podcast, extraordinarymomspodcast.com. There's a link to Finley's dancing video. There's cute pics of the family. More information about where you can follow them along in their journey. And like I said, we hope that surgery goes well for Finley and that it just gives her more mobility and freedom to do all the things that she was put on this earth to do. I love that inspiring story that she's starting it from such a young age and she'll continue to do great things. So thanks, Christina, for joining us today. You can follow me on Instagram at JessicaDahlquist3. And I love it when you share the podcast with friends. So if you love today's episode, please share it with a friend. Teach your friends how to listen to podcasts in the first place, because there's still a whole segment of society that says, what's a podcast? Can you believe it? Podcasts are awesome. So whether it's this podcast or another one, I hope that we can all continue to share these valuable conversations. So I hope you have a fabulous day, and I'll see you on Friday for another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast.